Welcome to Cookbook Club. We are home cooks from Portland, Oregon.
I'm Sarah Gray.
And I'm Renee Wilkinson. And joining us from our cookbook club is Emily Pagliarulo.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome. Every other episode of Cookbook Club will be focused not on a cookbook, but a cooking topic. We love to bake, as you probably know, and quick breads and muffins are a go-to baking project.
I am so excited for this episode.
Yeah.
So first, let's talk about what makes a quick bread a quick bread.
Yes. So it's not yeasted,
right?
It's a non-yeasted bread.
Yes. So no instant yeast, no sourdough nonsense in this conversation. It's usually just some combination of eggs and then your leaveners, like baking soda, baking powder, mm-hmm. right?
Exactly. I feel like most quick breads aim toward the sweet, but that's not necessarily the case.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime you're not using a yeast or a natural yeast, then it's a quick bread.
And many quick bread recipes, I think, can be made as muffins too.
Yeah. Yeah. Because once you've got the batter, like you can kind of shape it any way you want.
So of all of the categories of food that I've probably made in my whole life, like not just looking at my life in the last few years as a parent, but like since I was a kid, probably quick breads is the category that I think I have baked from the most, like cooked from, baked from, like total category made from scratch. That's the number one.
I may be the same. Yeah. What about you, Emily?
Yeah, I've made a lot of quick breads in my life. As an adult, I've discovered that I do better not eating wheat and gluten. So I've shifted to the gluten-free options, but I also have a 15-year-old daughter who loves to bake. And so she's been getting into the quick bread thing too, as well as muffins.
It's a good kind of beginner category, I think, because the fail rate is very low.
Yeah.
And it's not a huge time investment.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're usually delicious.
Sarah, you're an award winner.
I'm an award winner in quick breads. When I was 13, so I used to do 4-H when I was a kid, but I lived in the city, so we didn't raise any animals. Instead, we just baked and sewed.
That is so cool.
I know, and we would enter things into the Oregon State Fair. And when I was 13, I won it's not a gold medal. It's like a first place ribbon for my quick bread, which I don't even remember what the recipe was, but I know that it was a savory quick bread, not a sweet one.
That is so awesome. Would that be considered a blue ribbon? Is that where the blue ribbon
They're
thing
actually
comes from?
Purple.
Oh.
At the Oregon State Fair. I don't know why. Or they were like, 27 years ago. So is that right? 27 years ago? Oh, God. I was like, no, that has to be off by a decade.
No,
it's not.
Well, I was thinking the opposite. I was like, wow, that wasn't really that long ago. Oh, I love
it. Perspective shifts. Yeah. But they were purple, but it was like I was the prize winner. And there are people who judge the quick breads at the fair every year too. So like, I remember they like cut into it and they were looking at the structure and like making sure it didn't have any weird bubbles in it.
Was it underbaked?
It was not underbaked. But it was fun.
That's great.
Yeah.
So what are some of the, if we stay in that like bread over muffin category, mm-hmm. what are some of the quick breads that you're making today, Sarah?
Yeah. Well, let me tell you about one I just made. You know how much I love Yossi Arafi. She has a recipe on the New York Times called the carrot loaf cake with tangy lemon glaze.
I just inhaled a piece of it.
It was really delicious. I thought it was awesome. You make it in the style of a snacking cake. This is the thing I love about Yossi Arafi, is she's just like so great at just like simplifying it down to like a one bowl situation. It's a one bowl, unless you count that you have to make a glaze later, which you don't have to make, but I thought it really completed things. So you mix it just like a snacking cake. So like you're whisking the eggs with the brown sugar, and then you're adding like some oil, and then you add the flour afterward and you're sort of whisking as you go. Although this batter gets so thick at the end that you can't whisk it anymore. So you have to then set down your whisk and pick up your spatula, and then you fold in a bunch of grated carrots.
Yum.
So it's like a carroty bread, but it's sweet. It's not overly sweet though. I think it's mostly sweet because of the glaze.
I love a quick bread that has a non-sweet ingredient. Like
sure.
Zucchini breads, carrots, like mm-hmm. whatever to put in there, because you're not even like banana, like bananas are not like necessarily syrupy sweet.
Right.
So I feel like it's great because it adds all this like nice moisture. Sorry for people who do not like that word, but it's a great way to add that without like necessarily adding more oil or
Definitely.
Like some of them call for applesauce. I mean, those are all like great little mm-hmm. ways to make it more interesting.
For sure. Do you have a go-to banana bread?
No, but I think that you do.
I have a couple that I really like. What about you, Emily? Do you have a go-to banana bread?
I don't have a go-to. I'm kind of a constant experimenter.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I have two that I really like. First, I want to shout out this book. There's this book called Weeknight Baking by Michelle Lopez, which I like. I haven't baked so much from it that I could like give you a for sure endorsement, but she's got a banana bread recipe in there that's very good and very simple. And one of the things I love is that she gives you variations for it. So like it can kind of come out different every time. So she has like one variation where you mix chocolate chips in. And there's one variation that's called like the Instagram girl or something like that. Like it's like how you make it if you want to be like really pretty for a photo.
Like
you cut a banana like lengthwise down and then you like lay the cut side. Like you put the bananas sort of like on top of the loaf and then the banana gets like really caramely on the top. And then it looks really beautiful when it comes out of the oven.
That sounds great.
So that's kind of fun. And then the other one that I liked is a really different banana bread, which I really love. It's the spiced banana brown bread from Julia Tertian's Now and Again.
Oh, yeah. Did we have that at the Cookbook Club retreat?
I don't know. Yeah, yeah. I made it. I
it
made
was
it
good.
That. Yeah, it's good. It's really different. It's whole wheat flour. So it's like much sort of darker and denser, but it is also heavily spiced. It has like sort of a almost like a pumpkin spice vibe. Like it has like cinnamon. The thing I love about it most is that it has loads of ground cloves in it. I feel like every time you ever spice with cloves, it's always like an eighth of a teaspoon.
Yeah.
A pinch. Like don't go overboard on the cloves. She just goes nuts on the cloves. And I think it works so well. I love cloves.
I think clove and banana is a great combination.
Yeah. Yeah. So I highly recommend that. And it's very easy.
Does it taste like a gingerbread?
Not really. It's more banana-y and it's very whole wheat forward.
What is kind of cool about the clove and the reason why I think sometimes it's just such a small amount in recipes is that it's part of another spice mix.
Yeah.
You know, and so if it does not take very much clove to overpower like the cinnamon and the other things in it and stuff.
Very true.
So I think what's cool about this recipe is it's just on its own, right?
It still has other spices.
Oh,
it still
okay.
has a blend. I couldn't tell you exactly what, but I think it's like cinnamon and ginger.
Okay.
So yeah. I think the cloves maybe do sort of not overpower, but like they definitely lead.
Mm-hmm.
It's clove forward.
Solidly clove.
But it's very good. I love that bread.
Those sound great. So if we stay in this like zone of quick breads that have not overly sweet ingredients, I think that opens up the whole category of zucchini bread, which I think all of us have made tons of zucchini bread in our life. I feel like that's often one of the quick breads that you start with most. It's either banana bread or it's like zucchini bread.
Right.
And I think
it's also essential in the summer if you grow any zucchini because it will eat you alive.
Yes.
And you're like, what do I do with all the zucchini?
You need like one zucchini plant for like the whole block.
Yeah, exactly.
Like everybody doesn't need that in their backyard. So with those like huge zucchinis that you like didn't see, you know, you've been like checking your zucchini plant every night and like didn't see this one.
All of
one.
A sudden there's one the size of a baseball
bat.
Yeah,
like I swear they just like grow overnight like that. Those ones are perfect for zucchini bread. Yeah. And so since I'm such an avid gardener, I've made, I think probably like 100 recipes would not be maybe an exaggeration.
Amazing. But a lot.
I've definitely made probably 1,000 loaves of zucchini bread in my life. And so I've tried every combination of like chocolate and zucchini and just plain zucchini and nuts and like zucchini with different flowers and blah, blah, blah. But I don't actually have one like go-to recipe because I think I've just made so many that I just, you know, reach into the bag of zucchini bread recipes on the internet and pull one out. But Emily, I think that you have one that sounds really great. That's your go-to.
I do have a go-to recipe. It's one that I love and it's one that my kids love. And it is Gluten-Free as Written. And it's a recipe by Sarah Fort from Sprouted Kitchen.
Love her.
Who is awesome. Yeah. Loved her recipes for a long time. But it's the gluten-free zucchini muffins. They use a combination of almond flour and rice flour. It calls for the super fine rice flour, but you can just also use, I don't always have that on hand. So I usually do a combination of almond flour and then just gluten-free all-purpose.
Okay.
But they're really, really good. They have chocolate chips, a little bit of cinnamon, and they're just one of those recipes that's just perfect. They come out perfect every time.
How is the texture with that almond flour?
It's so nice.
It's a really good
yes,
texture.
It's moist and just has a really nice, delicate, crumbly texture to it. And my kids really like them. So I was on a rotation for quite a while making it, you know, it was part of our breakfast routine. I would make them once a week and I would actually mix up the dry mix in a double batch and then just have the double batch ready. So it was quicker to mix up the batch with the wet ingredients the next week.
Brilliant.
I've actually made that recipe on your recommendation.
How'd it turn out?
It turned out great.
It's
was
really
like
good.
Exactly what you talked about. It was just like super dependable, very easy to come together. And my kids also really liked it. I think because it has chocolate in it. So the recipe calls for semi-sweet chocolate chunks. And I used mini chocolate chips and it was perfect.
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes if you're making a muffin and the chocolate's too big, it can like sink to the bottom. And so the mini ones just were very evenly through the final baked product. And I loved around the edges of the zucchini muffin. onions. It was like a little bit chewy.
Ooh, yum.
It was a good texture. That's a home run recipe.
Yeah, Sarah's recipes are usually really, really well written and well tested. I was introduced to the Deb Perlman pumpkin bread recipe by my cookbook club friends. And yeah, it's really delicious. So this is not gluten-free as written, but I just subbed gluten-free flour. I had great results. And the thing that's so nice about this bread is that it has a like a cinnamon sugar crust on top, which is just perfection.
It is amazing.
I think this is going to be part of my holiday or, you know, fall routine now.
I feel like it could be an all year routine. I don't think that pumpkin should be limited to the fall. And I think that quick breads are great if they have either some sort of shredded vegetable or applesauce or pumpkin puree. Like interchangeably, I feel like those things would probably work in like almost any quick bread recipe. Like if it calls for pumpkin puree, you could just sub applesauce instead. If it calls for, like, you could probably sneak some zucchini in there.
Sure.
And I just think that pumpkin is too good to only make it in the fall. And also that crust that she has, that method couldn't that just be applied to any quick bread and it would be so much better.
It could. Yeah.
Yeah. So topping can really make a bread for sure.
Totally.
And that topping mixture is just like brown sugar and cinnamon or something. It's pretty simple. Or maybe it's just regular sugar and cinnamon.
She's got 1 tablespoon of sugar and 1 teaspoon of cinnamon.
Yeah, great.
It's just really classic cinnamon sugar.
Which just makes magic happen.
It really does. Mm-hmm. It's sort of magical.
And then also shout out again to Yossi RFE's book, Snacking Cakes, because I'm pretty sure that you could make any of those snacking cakes in a loaf sized pan and nobody would not think that that was just like a regular quick bread recipe.
Right, yeah, I know that. I think the line between a quick bread, like a sweet quick bread and a cake is a very thin one.
This is my one home run pound cake recipe that is part of the reason why I will never need other recipes for quick breads.
That's saying something.
I love a pound cake. I think that's like the perfect thing to make on a weekend morning because it doesn't take a lot of time.
Yeah.
Like I am not in the I am making cinnamon rolls from scratch camp. I admire all of you people who can do that, but it's too much for me. Mm-hmm. And so a pound cake, you can start making that as soon as you get up in the morning. And within an hour, you're going to be eating a delicious, a delicious treat. And it's like not so overly sweet. So this one that I love is called the most adaptable one bowl cornmeal pound cake from Melissa Clark from the New York Times.
Yum.
This is like this a great example of everything that is awesome about Melissa Clark because it is so versatile and it is so easy and it's just turns out perfect every time. This recipe, I'm pretty sure, came out in the pandemic and it was such great timing, right? Because like none of us could get to the grocery store to like go get special ingredients. And so the way that she has it written, it's almost like a formula. So there's like the right amount of sugar, the right amount of fat, and it calls for a half a cup of liquid fat. Like that's how it's written.
Okay.
It's like use olive oil or coconut oil or sunflower or melted butter or whatever you've got. Yeah, sure. Why not? Like go down super savory. It calls for the right amount of eggs. And then it calls for plain yogurt or buttermilk or sour cream or whole milk mixed with lemon juice. Like every almost amazing. All of the main components of this are like, here's 6 things that you could do to fit
that's
the bill.
That's so cool.
Including like the zest. She calls for any kind of citrus zest, basically. And it's this really funny way that she describes it at the beginning where you get a big bowl and you mix the sugar and the zest together. And then she's like, if you need a little aromatherapy, work the zest into the sugar with your fingers. This technique is supposed to infuse the citrus into the sugar. But it's like, she's not really sure that it does. Yeah. She's like mostly just doing it for like the therapeutic aspect of it. That it's one bowl and a whisk. It comes together super quick. You will never need another pound cake recipe. In terms of the cornmeal in here, I've used it with, I really prefer it with like a fine ground cornmeal rather than a medium. But I've also subbed almond flour here also.
Okay.
You could sub in like whole wheat flour if you want or like rye or whatever. I feel like she's just saying like, you know, this much of it should just be the regular flour and then play with this portion and it could be whatever you want.
I'm curious how many variations on this you've made.
Probably 10.
Okay.
At least.
And I would imagine they all come out with a slightly different character, but like it works, but maybe it just tastes a little different.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fun.
It's solid. Like you could use coconut, fat for your fat and then like lime zest. And then you have like a lime and coconut pound cake, which is great. I've used grapefruit before. I mean, the possibilities are endless.
That's a brilliant recipe. I love that.
That was like so intense from me.
It's okay. Why don't we take a break? And when we come back, let's talk about muffins. Dropcloth Samplers is a line of hand-drawn embroidery samplers, printed and ready for you to jump in and start stitching right away. Each pattern is hand-drawn by Rebecca Ringquist in her Portland, Oregon studio and printed for you to embroider with your own color and thread choices, like coloring book pages, but for embroidery. And with Rebecca's custom classes on Creative Bug, she can be there to guide you every step of the way. You can find Dropcloth Samplers on Instagram at Dropcloth or online at dropclothsamplers.com. Okay, so muffins are really, in most cases, not terribly different from quick breads. In fact, most of the time, you can take a quick bread batter and just plop it in a muffin tin.
Totally.
And bake it in a different shape. So, Emily, your zucchini bread that you talked about from Sprouted Kitchen was, it's actually a muffin recipe.
It is written
for
muffins.
But have you made it as a loaf?
I don't actually know if I have made it as a loaf, because the muffins are so successful that I've just stuck with that.
Well, and a muffin generally cooks for less time, which is easier. And if you want it to be individually portioned, then you don't have to cut it.
Right. It's easier for the kids.
Yeah.
I actually have a technical muffin question. I'm wondering if I might throw
Let's
out.
Have it.
Okay. I'm curious if you two are in the silicone liner, paper liner, or no liner, just fat camp when it comes to your muffin tins.
Very good question, Emily.
I've tried all three. I eventually threw my silicone liners in the trash because they were such a pain to clean. I could not get them clean. So I threw them away. I used them for years and then I just couldn't take it anymore.
I used to have silicone liners that I used more for cupcakes rather than muffins because that tends to be my standard muffin thing is like just bake it in the metal muffin tray. I don't use liners, paper liners for it.
So you're just greasing the tray.
Yeah.
You're greasing it or spraying it?
Usually spraying it.
So much easier.
With a canola spray?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could use olive oil if you want to, but
I'm
just using canola.
I have an avocado oil spray from Costco that I really like.
Yeah, actually, we use that one too.
Yeah.
Did they come out of your tins okay?
Yeah, I never have any problem. When I use some sort of spray form of oil, I don't have any problem with them coming out. But with the cupcakes, like you usually always have a paper liner with a cupcake. So I got the silicone ones for those.
Yeah.
Same experience as you, Sarah. They just became such a pain in the butt to try to get clean. I felt like they could never get all the way clean.
Yeah.
So they became bath toys.
Okay.
Like they eventually were just like things that my kids used to like, you know, make water fountains and stuff like that. Yeah. And then eventually they went to the thrift store.
Yeah. Mine were so gross that I literally threw them in the trash.
Well, what are you using, Emily?
Well, I do use the silicone liners, but they're not perfect. I have a third rack on my dishwasher. So if it wasn't for that, I think I would have also thrown them out.
But do they get clean in the dishwasher?
They get mostly clean.
Okay.
So, but they don't get totally clean.
Yeah,
so you have to pull them out and then I just have to do a little bit of scrub.
Yeah.
You know, additional scrubbing at the sink with a brush, which is annoying.
Yeah.
And then you have to let them dry before you stack them back up.
Right.
So there's that.
Otherwise they stick to each other.
Yeah. And then over time they get, they kind of collect taste, which isn't great either.
Yeah.
So they're not perfect, but we do use them. And I also keep the paper ones around too, because sometimes you want those. But I also have old muffin tins. I have these cool old kind of vintage ones that I think my grandparents might have even found for me or something.
Cool.
And so those probably need a bit more help than just a spray.
Yeah.
Do you have new tins?
I have new tins and I do spray sometimes, but usually I use a paper liner.
I do not have new tins and mine are fine. But
really?
Part of the reason why I believe in just putting it in the tin is because then you get a nice crust on the outside of it.
That's true.
Very true.
With the silicone one, it's very cakey.
It's never going to get crispy.
Yeah.
But, and your tins aren't too hard to clean.
No.
I mean, tins are also annoying to clean.
I will also soak them, though, in the sink when I'm done. Like, I'll soak them in the sink, and that's enough to, like, loosen up any, like, little bits of bread stuff on them, bread residue. Oh, you guys, isn't this awesome? Like, I'm sorry, but just for our listeners, like, can you see why it's so fun to have Cookbook Club? Because you can just sit here and, like, geek out on stuff that all of us have opinions on.
My husband doesn't want to talk about these things.
Well, he's not in Cookbook Club.
Even I have other friends who are just, like, they would be like, seriously,
is
this a whole conversation right now?
I feel like our listeners understand.
Yes, they do.
You're
our people.
Well, that's very true. Can we talk about some more actual muffin recipes?
Yes, let's do it.
Hit
me with one.
We were just talking about pumpkin bread, like when we ended that last segment. But there's a great recipe from Allison Roman in the New York Times for pumpkin maple muffins.
So good.
And so if you can come my direction and be open to making pumpkin themed things, not just in the fall, you should check this recipe out.
I think too that the maple, I mean, I guess maple is sort of autumnal, but I don't feel like this is like a fall pumpkin recipe. You know, like I think this really feels like an evergreen pumpkin recipe because it doesn't have traditional pumpkin spices in it. It has turmeric instead.
It does have cinnamon and ginger in it.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, and a little bit of nutmeg. But yeah, I think it's, because it's turmeric, it's not sickly sweet.
Right.
It still definitely has sweetener in it and a lot of fat, but it also has whole wheat flour in it, which I thought was great as like the base.
And they are the best color.
Yeah, it has a cup of brown sugar in it. So I take that back. That's my thing with Allison Roman.
She kind of makes maple syrup.
But she kind of makes it seem like she doesn't like sweet things. Yeah. And then if you actually like tease out her recipes, they have almost as much sweetener because it's
sometimes more.
Because then it has also 2/3 of a cup of maple syrup in it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very sweet muffin.
Yeah. But the whole wheat flour kind of like helps absorb some of that. And it's actually half and half whole wheat flour and all purpose flour. Mm-hmm. But it's a great recipe. And that's just another good example of how a quick bread can be a muffin.
I see. Yeah. It has brown butter.
I would be curious how that would be as a loaf.
Do you do that?
I have made it as written and I could not taste any like brown butteriness to it. I mean, I think that's like a teaser thing of like getting people to like, I've made other baking recipes where it's the same thing where it's like a browned butter, blah, blah, blah. But when it's in a baked good at the end of the day, you don't taste that. I think when you're cooking.
Works better like on a vegetable.
Well, there's a lot of other flavors going on here.
You totally can taste it when it's cooking. But when something bakes, like eventually it's all just getting absorbed. Right. And anyways.
Right. You know what's good though? This is just going to be random, but thinking of brown butter is, have you ever made those brown butter Rice Krispie treats?
No.
Rice Krispie treats are really good with brown butter in them. It's a New York Times recipe.
I've eyed that and not actually
made
it.
They are very good.
Thanks for the reminder.
It really elevates the Rice Krispie treat.
See, there's a case where you can, the flavor standout, mm-hmm. right? Because the other stuff is more subtle.
Yeah, you brown the butter and then you cook the marshmallows in the brown butter.
Ooh.
And so that it's nutty and sweet, and then you just add the cereal.
I mean, I can see how that works because there's like 3 ingredients.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
So it really shines. But I agree. And something like this with spices and maple syrup, like you're going to lose it completely.
Yeah.
Just melt the butter. Don't worry about browning it.
Sarah, you and I share a love for the perfect blueberry muffin.
Yes. Perfect blueberry muffins from Smitten Kitchen every day. They're so good. Also, they're easy, which is essential. So I love a blueberry muffin. My top blueberry muffin to eat is the one from the Grand Central Bakery, which they have that recipe in the Grand Central Baking book, but it's fussy. And so I don't often feel like I have the wherewithal to prepare that recipe. But this is a very easy recipe. It's a one bowl recipe. You put the blueberries in frozen. Boom.
I love that.
Yeah.
She also doesn't she call for some sort of like crumble topping or something?
Yeah, I think it's just like a sugar sprinkle on the top. It might be like turbinado sugar.
That I do. But I feel like there's another recipe I must be thinking of that has some sort of crumb. And I always skip that part. I just don't think a blueberry muffin needs that.
Yeah, I don't think this one needs it. No. But have you made the cranberry crumb muffins from the New York Times?
No, but those look so good.
So that's a Samantha Senavaratna, who I really like her recipes a lot. It's this cranberry crumb muffin. So it's a cranberry muffin with cranberries in it. And then it does have a crumb topping. And it's phenomenal. It's so good.
I love a crumb topping.
Yeah. And the cranberries give it such a nice like tart note that then like the crumb topping can be sort of like buttery and dense, but then like the cranberries really offset it.
I love cranberries so much.
And also that's a good one to use if you end up with a bunch of extra cranberries like after Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. then you can make the muffins.
So now that I know that I'm a barberry fan, I'm thinking actually trying barberries in this recipe would be awesome.
I love that. Except the cranberries in this crumb muffin are not dried.
Oh.
They're like full bursting cranberries.
Well, maybe with some tweaks I'd have to.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Or you know what you could do is you could use barberries in a morning glory muffin instead of raisins.
Ooh, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Do you have a go-to morning glory muffin?
I do. It's also from the New York Times, also from our friend Samantha Senavaratna. So she has a morning glory muffin in there that is phenomenal. It's so, so good. You know, morning glory muffins are full of stuff. So it has like grated apple, grated carrot. It has walnuts. It's so, so yummy.
Do they sometimes have pineapple?
Yeah, I think they sometimes do.
In order for it to be a morning glory muffin, it has to have what?
I think it is usually like raisins, carrot, coconut sometimes, walnuts.
Apple, I feel like.
Yeah. So this one has apple, walnuts, raisins, coconut, carrot. And then it's almost half and half all purpose and whole wheat flour. And then it also has cinnamon.
That sounds like an awesome recipe.
And coconut oil.
Yum.
It's very good. And it's not overly sweet. Like, it's sweet, but it's, you know, it has kind of like a toothy, like healthy vibe.
I like that.
It's very good.
Another one that has kind of a toothy, somewhat healthy vibe, I think, is the toasted oat and apple muffins.
Yes.
From Julia Tertian from Small Victories.
Such an easy recipe.
Yeah. It has that one step where you actually toast the oats before you mix it in.
Yeah.
If I were to come across a recipe like that from anyone other than Julia Tertian, I would be like, skipping that step. But Julia Tertian knows what she's doing. She's like so thoughtful, I feel like, about our time that she wouldn't ask us to do a step that wasn't worth it.
If it didn't matter, yeah.
And it matters, and it turns out so good.
Yeah.
And I feel like that recipe is also really adaptable. Like, you could sub something else in for the apples really easily.
Not only that, but she gives you some ideas. So, you know, because she does that. So it's like, or you could make it these other three ways. You know, I think there's like maybe even a blueberry variation in there. Yeah, I think those are great go-to. She has got another one too, the sled dog muffins from Simply Julia, which are not a traditional muffin. They're called a muffin. They're baked in a muffin tin, but they are like a healthy muffin sort of situation. They actually don't have any flour in them. They just have oats that are like buzzed up in the, like, to make oat flour, essentially. So it's like whole oats and like ground up oats, chia seeds, applesauce. Like, they're like a very like wholesome, hearty muffin, and they're dense. But then she has you put like a dollop of jam on the top of them before you bake it, so the jam gets even jammier. And I make those and put them in my kids' lunch boxes, and they love them.
Why are they called sled dog muffins?
Well, there's a whole head note in there about how Julia Tertian got into running. And she like needed something to fuel her runs, essentially. And she thinks of herself like a sled dog because she's like not super fast, but she can just go for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
her spirit animal.
It's the way to like feed her inner sled dog.
I love that. I've made that recipe before. I wasn't a huge fan of it. It was a little bit too like dense and maybe like stodgy for me.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it seems like maybe the title of bar would be more appropriate, because it doesn't really seem like they're a muffin. And if you're expecting a muffin, you might be disappointed with something that's more
like they're not going to puff up like a muffin.
Yeah.
Like, I would say they're almost in a different category. They're called a muffin because they're made in a muffin tin is the only real reason.
Well, that reminds me of a recipe that I have on deck to make, this lunchbox harvest muffin from, again, Melissa Clark from the New York Times.
Yeah.
So just because we were talking about like you put the sled dog one in your kid's lunchbox.
Yeah.
These ones, I think, would be totally lunchbox appropriate because they're like not just sugar and carbs.
Sure.
And Melissa Clark is very smart in the way that she wrote this. So she gives you the option to do regular muffins or mini muffins. And what's exciting to me about this recipe is that it calls for whole wheat pastry flour. So I like that it's like not just all purpose. And in fact, there isn't all purpose. That's just the flour. It has a combination of apple, grated carrot, but she also, because it's Melissa Clark, she's like, or butternut squash or parsnips. It's like, mind exploding.
Mind,
thank you.
Yeah.
And then a grated zucchini or grated beets.
Ooh.
Isn't that so cool? Like,
that is cool.
It's almost like a fridge clean out muffin.
Have you made them with beets?
No. I bet that it's going to like change the color.
Oh, yeah,
so
totally.
I don't know if like my kids would be into that. And then you can add shredded coconut or raisins. So it's almost like a hybrid between like the sled dog muffin and the morning glory.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. I'm excited for that one.
Sounds very good.
Can I ask you a gluten-free question, Emily?
Sure.
Have you found in your experience that with a lot of muffins and quick bread recipes that they still work if you just do a one-to-one sub?
I think the one-for-one mixes are really good. I use the King Arthur one-to-one baking mix or the Bob's Red Mill baking mix one-to-one.
So what are they made from?
They're a combination of rice, sorghum, and I think one other gluten-free grain.
Okay.
And then they have a little xanthan gum.
Yeah.
So they're made to perform just like a one-to-one swap for all-purpose flour. So I've had good success with those. And then, you know, there's other gluten-free blends that include chickpea flour, or garbanzo, which I wouldn't necessarily want for most baking recipes. So those I would do for something more savory.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I keep both on hand.
You know, Aran Goyoga in Canal et Bini, I feel like a lot of her baking recipes in there, you can start to kind of tease out your own like gluten-free base if you bake enough from that book, which I've baked a bit from that book. And I've thought about that, like, because she does that like similar combination of like brown rice flour, I think, sorghum. And then I feel like there's a third
tapioca flour.
She uses.
Well, yeah. A little starch. Yeah. Tapioca. And I think there actually might be some of that also in the baking blend.
Okay.
But she does a really, I mean, her recipes are really great exploring mm-hmm. different grains, and she uses buckwheat a lot. I'm also a big buckwheat fan.
Yeah. Have you ever had that figgy buckwheat scone?
Oh my God. I love the figgy buckwheat scone.
Have you made them?
No. Well, yes, maybe.
The recipe is in Kim Boyce's Good to the Grain.
Gosh, I feel like...
It's a project, but it makes so many that you can freeze them and then just pull out like a frozen spiral and
Is that bakery still exist?
Yeah, Bake Shop. They only do wholesale, though. They just sell to coffee shops.
Okay.
But I haven't seen a figgy buckwheat scone in the wild for a long time. They're incredible.
Those are one of those recipes that are just alchemy, right?
Yeah.
The recipe itself is just so...
Totally.
Good.
The fig jam takes a long time to make.
I see.
Which book is this from?
It's Good to the Grain by Kim Boyce.
Okay.
And it's all like baking with different flours. So that's where that whole wheat chocolate chip cookie, like my go-to chocolate chip cookie, comes from that book. And that's that recipe that was reprinted in that Food 52 Genius Recipes book. But it started in the Good to the Grain book.
Another ingredient that some gluten-free recipes in Iran particularly calls for is the super fine brown rice flour, which you do have to special order. It's not something that's easy to find, but it does make a difference in terms of the texture, because sometimes rice flours can have that grittiness to them, which sticks around in the finished product, which isn't always great. And so the super fine brown rice flour, I find, that's an ingredient that I was introduced to by Aran's writing.
Okay.
That I do keep on hand.
I love that.
We sure hope that you guys will join us next time. We're going to be cooking from Vegetable Kingdom by Bryant Terry. Sarah, why did we pick this book?
This book is really interesting. It's a vegan book written by Bryant Terry, who's like a real leader in the like sort of black vegan space. He's also a James Beard Award winner. And it's a really gorgeous book full of loads of vegetables.
That's exciting.
Cook along with us between now and then. Just tag us on Instagram at Cookbook Club Show or send us a voice memo or a comment at cookbookclubshow@gmail.com. You can find us online at cookbookclub.show.
And remember to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss the next one. And if you have time to leave us a review, that's a great way to help other home cooks find us too.
Thanks for being here, Emily.
Thanks.
This was so fun.
Thanks for having me.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.